Our morning at today's daf in Sanhedrin is Ayin Zayin. We start today at the Mishnah on Ayin Vav Amud Beis. We are now up to Hered. We have since starting this discussion of Chayvim Mises Beis Din really started the seventh parak. Sixth parak, we talked about the actual process itself, but we talked in the seventh parak about Chayvim Skila. There are 18 Yisurim in the Torah that are subject to the Skila penalty. And we went through the 18 already back in the seventh parak, and then since then. Prakim Zayin Ches, the seventh and eighth parak of the Masechta, we talked about those people who are subject to Skila. Then we moved to the eighth parak a couple days ago, and we talked about Sreifa. So there are two Onshim in the Torah that are subject to the Sreifa penalty, and so we discussed that at length. And now, as we start this next Mishnah, which we're going to introduce into today's daf, and that is Saif, we're talking now about somebody who's subject to the Mises Beis Din of decapitation. So we are now learning the Mishnah together. What Yisurim of the Torah are subject to this penalty? So Elain and Neragin, so the people that are subject to Hereg. Hereg and Saif are synonymous terms, right? Hereg just simply means to kill. Saif means with a sword. But anyway, but they're synonymous terms. So our Mishnah counts too. Ritzech, Anshei, and Iridachas. So we're talking about Ritzicha, murder, and we're talking about Iridachas, and that of a subverted city. If the city, the majority of the people in that city, or being over to Avodah Zarah, so as individuals they would have been subject to Skila, as we discussed already back in the seventh parak. But as a city, as a citywide act of Avodah Zarah, so they're going to be subject to Saif. And yes, it's interesting. We already made this point earlier that individuals worshiping idolatry are going to be subject to a higher form of capital punishment than an entire city who's being over to Avodah Zarah. But that's something that we discussed in the past. It's certainly a note of interest. Okay. Yeah. It certainly demands attention. It demands an explanation why that should be. But anyway, now for the rest of this mission and for the rest of today's daf, we're going to be talking about Ritzicha, and let's not make the fundamental error. Okay. And what is the fundamental error of this entire daf today? Is that we're not talking the difference between right and wrong. Okay. In other words, the differences that we're going to be talking about today, and we're going to be making many, many distinctions in terms of what is and what isn't murder. Keep in mind, it's not the difference between right and wrong. It's the difference between wrong and wrong. It's just when is it wrong and murder, and you're subject to a capital punishment, and when is it wrong? It's murder, but the courts are not going to take care of you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take care of you. Okay, that's it, right? Similar to this country, where you have laws of first-degree murder, second-degree murder, manslaughter, meaning it's all levels of wrong. It's just a question of degrees. Here in the Mishnah, as we're learning the halacha now, of when you're subject to the Ritzicha penalty and when you're not subject to the Ritzicha penalty, it's just a question of degrees. Meaning, when is it that Beis Din can try you versus when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to try you himself. And in other words, and in order to hit the threshold of being Ritzicha, you have to have a intended act of actual murder. And again, as we go through the Gemara Mishnah and the Gemara, you're going to see there are many cases over here. You're going to look at that case, you're going to be like, oh, that was wrong. It is wrong. All of it's wrong. It's just a question of whether or not you're subject to the capital punishment. So please don't make the fundamental error that we're making distinctions here between right and wrong. We're making distinctions between Mises Beis Din versus Mises Bidei Shamayim. That's it. That's really the entire discussion of our Gemara. But anyway, but still, it's all going to be very interesting, but don't make the big mistake. Let's say a person were to hit his friend with either a stone or a piece of metal, or let's say takes his head and puts it in the water and holds it under the water, or takes his head and puts it in the fire and holds it in the fire, to the point where the person now cannot escape from the water or the fire, and the person dies, so then the perpetrator is now going to be considered a murderer, and he's going to be subject to Mises Beis Din, and he's going to be Chayv Herik. Let's say I push somebody in the water, I push somebody in the fire, and the person had an opportunity to escape, and for whatever reason elected not to, and he died, so pater. The perpetrator now is not going to be subject to the death penalty. In order to be subject to the death penalty, you have to do a causative act that causes a person to die and will definitively cause a person to die. Here, since the person had an opportunity to escape and for whatever reason elected not to, so that means that you are going to be exempt from capital punishment. Shisa bosa kelp, shisa bosa nachash. If, let's say, you instigate either a dog or a snake to go and bite somebody and kill somebody, putter. So you're gonna be exempt. So again, you're not doing an actual causative action in order to kill somebody. You instigated something to cause the death. That's called grama, and you're going to be putter. You're going to be exempt. Hishik bosa nachash, rav yudah mechav chacham and pochim. You're holding the snake in your hand, and with the snake in your hand, you then have the snake bite somebody. It's almost like you're whipping your hand, your arm, with the snake in tow. It's like basically like a weapon. So, machlokas tanayim, whether or not this is considered murder to the point where it's a capital punishment, or it's not, or you're going to be exempt from capital punishment. And the Gemara later on will explain what exactly is behind this machlokas in the Mishnah. We'll come back to that at a later point in time, not today. Amar Shmuel. Mimnei malo nemer yad bebarzel. So Shmuel makes the following observation. As you go through the Pesukim, when the Torah describes Ritzicha, when the Torah describes murder, so Rashi over here quotes the Pesukim, right? I'm looking at the first Rashi in the Gemara, lo nemer yad bebarzel, kamasha nemer be'evin yad, bekli eitz. So be'evin yad bekli eitz yad. When the Torah describes weapons like stone and like wood, so the Torah gives a description where it's a handful, meaning that there has to be a requisite amount, there has to be a shear. And the shear is basically something that can be held in your hand. Shiesh bo malei achiza debi'in et shi'ura. All right, Rashi says straight out that you need something where to shear. Aval bebarza, but when you're attacking somebody with a piece of metal. Ksiv v'im b'kli barzel hikau. The Torah does not use the word yad. The Torah just simply says a metal instrument. And so what Shmuel is making now is an observation that when it comes to metal, it would seem that the metal itself doesn't have to have a requisite amount. There's no shear for the metal. And Shmuel says, correct. Metal can kill somebody with any amount. The Gemara quotes the Brisa as well. Rabbi Omer, Galu v'yadulf nemisha amar v'haya olam. Kadosh Baruch Hu knows. Shar barzel meimis b'choshu. That metal can kill with any amount. That's why the Torah doesn't give a shear. The Torah doesn't use the word yad. But that's only if you pierce somebody with the metal. Meaning if you hit somebody with the blunt side of the metal, so then metal becomes no different than wood or with stone. Meaning that with wood and stone, it has to be a significant amount of wood or stone, a handful of it. So if you're hitting somebody with a piece of metal and you're not using the sharp side, but the blunt side, so then that too needs a shear. Interesting over here, what are you going to do with metal? To kill somebody. So Rashi over here says, well, you're going to stab him in a critical organ. Rashi says, I'm reading the Rashi, you take a needle and you put the needle into someone's esophagus or you stick it into the heart. So in other words, so now you're putting it into an organ and a critical blow where even just a small little piercing would jeopardize a person's life. So that is what you could do with a piece of metal. Tosfos is bothered by a very simple question. Perhaps you're thinking of this question as well. You could do same thing with a splinter of wood. In other words, if you take a nice sharp splinter of wood and you pierce somebody in the neck and hit the esophagus, or you pierce somebody in the heart, so you're going to have the same effect by a splinter of wood. So Tosfos suggests, therefore, that it's not just that you can do a piercing with these items, but also, I'm going to use modern terminology. I don't know if this is exactly what Tosfos means, but also the metal creates some sort of infection, inflammation. Right? Tosfos writes, I'll read the Tosfos inside, El Anira, second to last Tosfos of the Amud. Mishum de Amra beperk Reb Elazar demilo beperk behema mekasha uva ha'arel, okay, a number of places in throughout the Gemara, de barzala mizraf zarif. It creates some sort of inflammation. The way you and I would say it probably is that it creates some sort of infection. Okay. Either way, in other words, so Tosfos is just simply pointing out that there may be something specific to metal that you don't have by other materials and other instruments. Okay. Anyway, back to the Gemara. The Kavashal Avasoch Hamayim. We're talking about putting somebody's head in the water and holding it underwater. And if you do that, said the Mishnah, that is an act of Ritzicha, and you are subject to capital punishment. Whereas the contrast case in the Mishnah was, if you just push somebody into the water and he had a means of getting out and he opted not to, so you're not going to be Chayv Misa, that's not a capital crime. So Reisha Rabusa Kamashmalan Vesefer Rabusa Kamashmalan, and now the Gemara points out there are really two Chidushim over here. Number one, Reisha Rabusa Kamashmalan Avagav Delav Iudachvo. Let's say in the first case of the Mishnah where it is a capital crime. It would be a capital crime even if you're not the one who pushed him into the water. As long as you held his head underwater, Now, holding somebody's head under water, even without pushing him, is not an action, meaning you're just simply keeping your arm in one position. So it's that's the chiddush of the Mishnah. It's not considered grama, and it is considered murder. Right, and that... Right, exactly. And as Phil points out, meaning the havamina would have been that this is grama, meaning you're not by a positive causation causing somebody to die. You're just simply holding his head underwater. But what the Mishnah is teaching us is that's considered a chiyuv misa. However, a sefer rabusa kamashman afgav the dachlo kevin diachol alos misham ameis pater. Now, in the second half of the Mishnah, we're also learning a chiddush. You physically pushed him. You pushed him into the water. But because he had an option of getting out of the water, and for whatever reason he elected not to, so you're going to be exempt. That's not going to be considered capital punishment of murder. Again, it's wrong. It's wrong. I'm going to keep hitting this point again and again throughout the morning. It's wrong, obviously. I mean, beyond wrong. Meaning it's, you know, what you're doing is cruel and heinous, and, you know, you caused somebody to die. But in terms of seeking capital punishment to base, then you're not going to get it because he did have an option of escaping. So, if you put him in a position where he can't get out, so that would seem to go more like the first side of the Mishnah. Okay, so under those circumstances, you would be pater. So really, there are two chiddushim in the Mishnah. And now the Gemara points out this. Let's go back to the first chiddush of the Mishnah, and that is basically we're learning together this idea of constriction, meaning as long as you hold him in a particular place, you're holding him in a place where it's a lethal place to be in. So constriction, by definition, now is going to be considered murder. And the Gemara takes us through this idea in somewhat more detail. Kavash minalan, right? We're continuing in the Gemara. So how do I know that holding him in a certain place is going to be considered a chiyuv misa? So Amar Shmuel, Amakra, o be'eva. The Torah, when describing murder, the Torah says that there was a hatred that you had towards the person. L'rabbis it's a mitzamtzim. And that the term is superfluous, meaning obviously there's hatred if you're planning on killing somebody. So in other words, what do we gain from this pasuk? What additional chiddush do we have? The idea of constriction. That if I'm holding somebody in a place where, by holding him there, his life is now going to be terminated, so that is considered an act of ritzicha, that's considered murder. Gemara now wants to do the following. So we basically have learned together now that constriction when it comes to murder is considered murder. I hold somebody in a place where he's going to die, so where he's definitely going to die, and immediately. And when I say immediately, by the way, meaning it doesn't have to be immediate death, it just happens to be that the cause of death is currently present. So I'm holding somebody's hand underwater, I'm holding somebody in a fire, so the cause of death is immediately present, so as long as I hold them in place, that is considered an act of murder. Okay. Now what we're going to do is we're going to try to take this model that we just learned together and move it over to Nezek. Now we're going to move it over to damages. Now, generally speaking, by damages, what do we know? The rule is very simple by damages. Grama benizakin is pater. That if I do damage to somebody, but not with a direct action, but with an indirect action, so there's going to be an exemption as it relates to damages. So now... question, it's a really good question. When I do an act of constriction, so by murder we learn together that's murder, but that's based on a pasuk. Do we say the same idea when it comes to nezek, when I do damages? Meaning, are we going to take the same chiddush that we just learned and apply to damages, or maybe not? Maybe by damages we'll just simply operate with our general standard of biadayim, doing something active, or grama, or something which is indirect, and you're going to be pater. Gemara here gives the following example. I took my friend's animal and I held the animal under the sun, under the baking hot sun, and the animal died. So now, did I physically kill the animal? No. But did I hold the animal in place where now the animal is going to die? Yes.
Left
the animal in the car, exactly. So now, is this considered am I going to be subject to the penalties of Nezek? The monetary penalties of Nezek. So, Ravina Mechayv, Rav Acha Barav Pater. So we have a debate amongst the Amoraim. Ravina says you're Chayv, and Rav Acha says you're Pater. Ravina Mechayv Kavachomer. Ravina says, well, look, I think it could be a very simple logical deduction. Look, let's start with murder. Now, by murder, in order to qualify as murder, it has to be intentional. We keep saying it, it's a tenet. It's a fundamental tenet when it comes to murder. Meaning that if it was not intentional, it's not murder. Now, under certain circumstances, it's considered choking, and yes, you have to go into galus. But in other words, in order for it to be constitute murder, ritzicha, where you're subject to capital punishment, there has to be intent. And yet, by murder, where clearly we've already limited the scope of murder, there has to be intent. What do we say regarding constriction? If you intentionally constrict somebody in a position where he's going to die, you're going to be subject to echiv misa. So now, chay mechay v'otzim mitzamsem, nizakin, we now turn to the top of ayin zayin amud aleph. So when it comes to damages, sha'asabem shogei kemezid v'onis karatzon, eino din shechay behem esim mitzamsem. So now let's turn our attention to nezek. When it comes to damages, so what do we learn about Bakama? Dav chavav, adam muad la'olam. That when it comes to a person and damages, you are always going to be liable for damages. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see when I backed my car up into your car. When it comes to damages, it doesn't matter. Meaning, you're always going to be chayiv, whether it was intentional, unintentional. The Gemara over here says ones, meaning that's a tremendous chiddush. And there is a discussion in of itself in terms of whether or not every case of ones is going to be chayiv. But for our purposes right now, we can keep it really simple. Meaning, when it comes to damages, unintended damages, you're always going to have to pay for. So now, by damages, you see that your level of liability is much wider. So if by murder, it seems like such a sound argument. If by murder, where your degree of liability is limited only to a case of intent, and you are going to be subject to a penalty for constriction, so by nezek, where your level of liability is much wider, including even unintended actions, so for sure constriction should be something that you should be liable for. It seems like really a very sound argument. Now, Rav Achaba Rav Poter. And now the Gemara gives the other side of this argument, and that is that you're going to be exempt. In other words, a constriction in the case of Nezek is where you're going to be exempt. Why? I'm Rav Misharsha, my time of Davua. So Rav Misharsha says, what's the reason behind, I'm sorry, my time Mishum Davua, the Abba, the Poter. What's the reason behind my grandfather? Meaning Rav Misharsha must have been the son of Rav Acha, the son of Rav. So what's the reason behind my grandfather, says your Poter? I'm a Kra, most Yumas Amake, Rotseach Hu. Birotseach, who de chayevlan ben mitzamtzem ben izakin lo chayevlan mitzamtzem. So the Gemara says, look, yes, it's true that the constriction regarding murder is considered an act of murder, but that's because the Torah there said specifically that constriction is considered an act of murder. Meaning, and again, it's not logical, but the Torah is telling us that really fundamentally, tzimtzum, constricting something in a particular place is really an act of grama. It's an act of grama. It just happens to be that by murder, the Torah includes it under the umbrella of this is Ritzicha, where Basin can execute you. In other words, it's a capital crime when it comes to Ritzicha. But in terms of what it is, fundamentally, it's really Grama. So if I do it by Nezek, I'm therefore going to be Pater, because then we fall under the general rules of Grama ben Izakin is Pater. Okay, so what we have over here is a machlokus amoraim in terms of whether or not constriction by nezek is going to be subject to liability or not liability. And the argument you can make in order to include it is that if it's true by murder, it's certainly true by nezek. And the counter argument could be is that since the Torah goes out of its way to tell you that you're liable by murder, it's specific to murder, but generally it is an act of groma. That's kind of an oxymoron. But anyway, but it's groma. Okay. Continuing now in the Gemara, Amarava, Kaftu Omeis Barav Pater. Okay, so here we go now. Case after case in the Gemara, and we're looking to see whether or not this is considered an act of murder subject to Mises Beis Din or not, or just Grama. So the Gemara starts off with the following case. Let's say you tie somebody up, and he dies out of starvation. So you're going to be Pater, you're going to be exempt. This is not considered an act of murder subject to capital punishment. Now, why not? Rashi over here writes, I'm reading the Rashi inside, Kafto meis barav, debishasha kafto ein kan dvar hariga. Vaharav ba'a me'elav, v'holek v'chazik la'achrizman kosha. You're going to get hungry, right? We just had a 25-hour fast. Okay, so what happens after some time of not eating is that you're going to get hungry. But here, the cause of death is occurring after your act of constriction. Meaning, in order for this to be a capital punishment crime, it has to be that the constriction and the cause of death are currently present at the time of constriction. Consider what we learned just a little bit earlier this morning. You're submerging someone's head under the water. The cause of death is going to be the water. water's right here. So when I'm holding him under the water, so the cause of death is currently present. That's why you're going to be chayiv. I put somebody's head in a fire, you're going to be chayiv. The cause of death is currently present. If I just simply tie somebody up and preventing him from eating, so the cause of death, is hunger, that comes at a later point in time. Okay. If let's say I tie somebody up where the heat where I tied him up was unbearable, the cold that I tied him up was unbearable, and by unbearable I mean is that it's the kind of heat, it's the kind of cold that would cause somebody to die. So as long as the condition is present at the time when I tied him up, so that's now murder with capital punishment. However, sof chamalavo, sof tzinalavo, pater. If, let's say, at the time when I tied him up, it was not unbearably hot. Let's say I tied him up at night. And then out comes the sun and kills him. So then I'm going to be pater, I'm going to be exempt. So under such circumstance, so I'm going to be pater, I'm going to be exempt. Rashi over here says, and again, just I keep reminding you, so this, when the Gemara says pater over here, it doesn't mean it's good. It just simply means Basin's not going to deal with it. This is now Bedina Shamayim. Rashi writes right on this point. Sof chamalava pater, I'm reading the Rashi Klomar. Im lo aisa sham chama bisha shekafto. Ava sof lavo kan vizelo yacholamo vizof alamos pater. Shelo aya oreg mizumin lahariga ugramahu. So Rashi says again, over here, the cause of death was not currently present at the time of constriction. Of course it's going to come, meaning the sun rising is kind of like a given in life. The sun is going to come up. And yes, it's going to get unbearably hot, but at the time when I tied him up, it wasn't, and therefore this falls under the category of grama. And Rashi writes, Ein dino masa lebeisin el shamayim. So at this point in time, no longer does Beisin deal with this case, HaKadosh Baruch Hu deals with this case. But this falls under the category of grama, and therefore Beisin is not going to execute you. Next, back to the Gemara. If I tie somebody up in front of a lion, I'm going to be exempt. If I tie somebody up in front of a swarm, so then I'm going to be chayev. Now tying somebody up in front of a swarm of insects, also going to be exempt because it's not this swarm that necessarily killed them, it's the next swarm that's going to kill them. Let's first deal with the case of the lion. In the case where I tie somebody up in front of a lion, I'm going to be exempt. Why am I going to be exempt? Rashi points that over here. The lion's going to get him anyway. Meaning, by me tying him up, I did not put him in a situation where his condition was any better or worse than it was previously. The lion's going to get to him anyway. Now, how come the lion's not going to get to me? I don't know. Somehow, I'm okay. But in other words, I didn't make his condition any worse. Now, granted, I didn't give him a fighting chance. Okay, granted, and again, I just keep repeating. It's obviously wrong. Wrong is an understatement, but it's okay. But I'm not trying to understate it. Again, we're just making a distinction between what is considered capital versus not a capital punishment. So I didn't change his chances of survival. However, when it comes to a swarm, so the first opinion of the Gemara is by me tying him up, so I changed the chances of survival. Had he been untied, he could have gotten away. But now that I tied him up, so then chances of survival are now significantly diminished, and I did that, therefore I'm going to be chayiv. The second opinion of the Gemara, that of Rav Ashi, is that no. That even in the case of where I tie him up in front of a swarm, it's not this particular swarm that's going to get him, it's the next wave that's going to get him. But what's that, the next wave? That's called grama. Again, if the cause of death is not present at the time of constriction, so then that is not considered biyadayim, that's considered grama, and therefore I'm pater. Itmar, kafa lav gigas uparo lav maziva rava rabbi zera chanamar chai v'chanamar pater. Okay, let's say I take a barrel and I put it over his head, and basically I have him breathing his own air. Okay, so in other words, we breathe out carbon dioxide, and so now with the barrel over my head, so now I'm breathing in my own carbon dioxide. Okay, and the person dies as a result of that. Or paralav maziva, the person's sleeping, and what I do is he's right now under some sort of shelter. I open up the roof of the shelter, and now I allow the cold air to come in. So under those circumstances, so in the case where I put the barrel over his head, or I allow the cold air to come in, So is that an act of Ritzicha, yes or no? Machlokus amongst the Amorim. So we have a debate between Rav and Rabbi Zera as to whether or not you're Chayv or you're Pater. Now, who said which position? Right now we don't know. The Gemara now is going to make arguments. Tesayim de Rav Hudam or Pater. I think Rav is the one who says that under these circumstances you're going to be exempt. Amar Rav Kafto Meis Bar Rav Pater. So because remember, what did Rav teach us earlier this morning? That if I tie somebody up and now he dies out of starvation, so I'm going to be exempt. The cause of death is coming at a subsequent time. So you see that if cause of death comes at a later point in time, even though I'm the one who generated that cause of death, but if that cause of death is occurring at a later point in time, I'm going to be exempt. Over here, when I take the barrel and put it over his head, when I open up the roof and allow the cold air to come in, so the cause of death is coming at a later point in time from the time where from the point of my action. And so therefore, the Gemara now wants to argue that Rava would say under these circumstances, you're going to be Pater. Other Rabbi, the Gemara says, yeah, but you know what? I can also make an argument that Rabbi Zera would say Pater. Why? Tisayim de Rabbi Zera, damar Pater, damar Rabbi Zera, haiman de Ayla lechavre, bebeis de Shisha, v'adla lech Shraga, umeis chayev. Gemara, Rabbi Zera describes the following scenario. Let's say I bring somebody into an hermetically sealed room, airtight, no air can go in and can escape. And then I put somebody in such a room and I close the door. Rabbi Zera says, when is it going to be considered an act of murder? And again, murder over here meaning capital punishment murder, only when I light a fire in that room, creating now a lack of air, a lack of oxygen, what the Gemara describes as hevel. So under those circumstances now, that's an act of Ritzicha. And the Gemara now makes a simple inference. Taima de Alikle Shraga. The only reason why I'm subject to the death penalty, why this is Ritzicha, capital punishment Ritzicha, is because I lit a fire in that room. Halo Adlikle Shraga lo. But if I didn't light a fire in that room, and I just simply put him in that room and I locked the door, and yes, he's going to die. And yes, he'll asphyxiate. But that's coming at a later point in time. And so you see that according to Rabbi Zera, that if the cause of death is occurring at a subsequent point in time, then what my action is, so then I'm going to be Pater. So now, by putting the barrel over somebody's head, or by opening up the roof, so presumably Rabbi Zera would also argue in that case that you be Pater. Here's the problem. The problem is that in the case of the barrel, in the case of the removing of the roof, I know one of these Amarim say that you're Chayev. The problem is that based on their other psakim that they gave, it would seem that both of them would say that you're Pater. Amrei. So the Gemara says it really is. We're going to argue that Rabbi Zera is the one who says that you're Chayev in the case of the barrel, and in the case of the roof. Over here, we'll make the following distinction. Basically, it's what Phil said, and that in the case of the room, if I put somebody in a room, so the room is a larger size room, and his death is not it didn't start at the time when I put him into that room, and yes, it's of course the death will come about at a later point in time, but that will be for the lack of air, which will come. It will come, but it didn't start now. The cause of death did not start at the time. Masha Enkein. Yeah, put the barrel over somebody's head, and now I'm creating a very, very closed in space, very small closed in space, and you're breathing in your own carbon dioxide almost immediately, or I should say better, immediately. So under those circumstances, that is considered a more immediate cause of death, and that's why Rabbi Zera would say that in such a case you'd be chayav. Let me just read this inside the Gemara. Hasam below shraga lo maskel hevla. However, I'm sorry, b'shaite. Hacha below shraga nami miskel hevla b'shaite. But with the barrel over the head, so even without shraga, even without a fire, immediately the effects of him breathing out the carbon dioxide, bringing back in the carbon dioxide, and that enclosed area is already starting the cause of death, and that's why it's capital punishment. Yes. Again, over here, right? The Gemara earlier discussed grama as it relates to killing. It may be grama, but in other words, but the Gemara says that. Wait, just one second. The Gemara says that constriction of an individual, and by constriction, you are going to be chayav misa. That is considered capital punishment, and by murder, by nezik maybe not. Right, we discussed this a little bit earlier this morning. By nezik maybe not, but by murder. A constriction where the cause of death is present at the time of constriction, so that's going to be considered an act of murder.
Is it the time or is it the koach of the person that's being
restricted? Well, again, over here we're talking about constriction. So when we're talking about constriction, there's no koach of the person. The person just simply holding another person in a position where he's going to die. And now the only distinction between whether or not this is capital punishment or not is going to be where if the cause of death is present at the time when I constrict. That, the Gemara says, is a critical factor.
Joseph's brothers.
Wait, 1 second. What is it?
Ladder. And...
Well, the ladder's coming up. the ladder's coming up. Simon Sulam Tris Simon and Bekoso, the Gemara is going to give us a Simon to help remember these next cases. Amar Rava. We're continuing in the Gemara. We're on the very top of Ayin Zayin Amid Beis, 3 lines down. Amar Rava Dach Labor Vesulam Bebor. Uva'achir Vesilko. So again, all these halachos are given to us today by Rava. Every one of them. Most of them, I should say. Most of them. You push somebody into a pit. Okay. And there's a ladder in the pit. Somebody else comes along and takes the ladder away. Afilu who cut him Vasilko? And we can go even one step further. Let's say you're the one who takes the ladder away. So Pata, so this is not considered a capital crime. It's a crime. I keep repeating it because it's a fundamental error of today's daf, right? People say, you know, some people on today's daf, oh, it's okay. No, it's not okay. It's just that basin is not going to kill you. That's all. So so you're going to be Pater. So to be eaten at the shadi yachol alasu, because again, for it you have to put on your legal hat. Today we're all lawyers. I mean, every day we're lawyers, but today specifically, you really have to put on your legal hat. At the time when you throw him into the pit, he had a means of escape. Even if you're the one who at a later point in time removed that means of escape, but still, when you pushed him in, so he did have an avenue of getting out, he had the ladder, so therefore this is not considered Ritzicha. And what about the removal of the ladder? Well, that's grama. And so therefore you're going to be Potter.
Is there a time?
As long as it's not Be'idna.
He's got to be the second that he throws the
well, second. In other words, then not enough time for him to get out. That would be my best guess. We'll get to your point a little bit later on. No, that point's coming up. Okay. Let's say I throw an arrow at somebody, meaning I shoot an arrow at somebody, and he had a shield. So right now, currently, he's not in a position of critical danger. Now, after the arrow shot, somebody takes the shield and removes it from him. And again, let's rev up the chiddush. Or let's say you remove the shield from him. Now, admittedly, by the way, you have to run faster than the arrow, and I know that's tricky, although I had, just out of creativity, I had this visualization of him having a string tied to the tied to the shield, and he'll pull on the string. Huh? Oh, okay. Good. I like it, by the way, when like me and the Rishonim are like...
Yeah.
Right. Okay, right. Right. So Vinatlo Vafilu Kana Vinatlo Potter. So under those circumstances, once again you're gonna be exempt. Because at the time of shooting, so he was not in a critical position. And yes, he now was subsequently exposed, but that's subsequent. So to be in the Shajibe Mifsai Piske Agire. Because at the time when you shot, he was in a safe position. I'm a Rav Zarek Bochet for
sim. I assume he was tied up because if he could move avoid it, then it would be...
Well, right? What you're sounding sounds reasonable. I mean, but... Oh, well, we'll see some more cases. And I think your question will be addressed, maybe. Let's say you throw an arrow, so you shoot an arrow at somebody, and he had the antidote in his hand. Okay, so, you know, some arrow shots, by the way, no antidote is going to help you. But just, like, we're assuming right now, there are certain givens in this case. So let's just deal with the assumptions. The assumption of the case is that untreated, so you're going to die. Treated, you're going to survive. That's a given. And not only if you treat, you're going to survive, but you actually have the simanim. You have the antidote right in your hand. So zarek bochets v'simanim v'yado uva acher upizran. And somebody comes along and after the arrow was released, so from his hand, so someone knocked the antidote out of your hand. So pater. The Gemara is going to say Potter, but let's go even one step further. Let's say you, the shooter of the arrow, are the one who then, after you shot the arrow, knocked the antidote out of his hand. So Potter. So you're going to be exempt. To be eaten at the shadabe yacholis rapo, sava. So here, at the time when you shot the arrow, so he was not in a critical condition. meaning, and it's just, this obviously is even a bigger chiddush, because you're shooting him, and without him applying the antidote, so he's going to die. But still, since the antidote in his hand, readily accessible, so it's considered as if he was not in a critical state. If somebody knocks the antidote out of his hand, even if you're the one who does it, but subsequently, so then you're going to be potter. I'm Ravashi Hilka Chafil Saman Bishuk. Ravashi says, I'd like to bring this to its logical conclusion. Let's say he doesn't have the antidote readily in hand, but CVS is just a short distance from here. And he can, and he's just with it. With, yeah, right, right, that's right. Sometimes those lines. I know. So the, but if, let's say, the antidote is not physically in his hands, but readily accessible, Hilka Chafil Saman Bishuk. So if you can get it, if you can get the antidote on the shuk, so then the shooter of the arrow is not going to be subject to the capital punishment. So Amalei Rav Acha Bar Rava Rav Ashi Nizdam Lo Siman Emahu. Well, let's now discuss the following scenario. Strange scenario, but let's discuss it. Let's say he didn't have any antidote in his hand, and we didn't know about any antidote in the market. You shot him with the arrow, and then after shooting with the arrow, and the two of us did not know of any antidote, someone then informs him, oh, you see that arrow shot? Looks pretty bad. You're going to die. But it just happens to be that I now know, right? I'm telling you right now that there's some antidote. Just go down the block and you'll be fine. So now the antidote was only, the information was only given to us subsequent to the shot. Am I now going to be exempt from capital punishment? At the time when I shot him, I didn't know about the antidote. He didn't know about the, about it. So if we're informed about it, and again, obviously over here, another given in this case, is that we can get to it in time. So if we're informed about it afterwards, is that considered, is that considered now an exemption from capital punishment? So he says, oh, good. You just gave a wonderful argument to exonerate him and to acquit him from the basin. Meaning, yeah, I think that would also be included in this case as well. Okay. Amarava. Zarek Sura Bekosa V'chazra La'achore V'harga Chayev. Okay, now we talk about a rebound. Okay, we're now entering into the world of physics. So you throw a rock against the wall, and it rebounds against the wall, and it hits somebody, so you're going to be chayev. V'tana Tuna, the Gemara says, then the Braisa also makes exactly the same point. Kigon Elu Hamisachim B'Kadur, like the kids playing ball. Okay, I used to, as a kid, this was a popular game, right? Handball, stickball, but I'm saying, just hitting the ball against the wall. Throwing the ball against the wall, looking for a rebound. So even though the Gemara, the Bryce, is comparing it to a child's game, but it means, though, that since the children expect the rebound, it's physics. In other words, it's just simply the force, just now in a new trajectory. So if that kills somebody, shaharu b'meizah naragim b'shogeg golem. So if my intent was to kill somebody, so then that's ritzicha, that's an act of murder. And therefore I'm going to be chayev. If, let's say, it happened, but not with my intent, but in other words, but it was negligent on my part, meaning it's a case of shogeg, so then I'm going to be sent into galus. So the Gemara says, b'shogeg olam pshita, b'meizeh naragin itzrichle. So the Gemara says, well, the fact that you're sent into galus, that's, the Gemara says, that's what we would call obvious, meaning you were clearly negligent. The Gemara says, but really, the bigger chiddush is that this is considered an act of murder. Ma'u detei ma'asra safikhi. So me and Madajra Kamashmalan. So the Gemara says, I might have made the argument that when warned, hey, don't throw that rock against the wall, because even though the warning may be issued, how do you know that the rock is for sure going to rebound off the wall and hit somebody? So when halacha, we refer to this as a hasra safek, a warning, but the warning is not clear whether or not the action will result. In this case, the reaction will result. But the Gemara says, but that's in fact what the Gemara is teaching us. What the Bryce is teaching us, what Rav is teaching us, is that the rebound is a reality, it's a physical reality, and therefore it's not considered hasra safek, and therefore when you throw a ball against a wall, or a rock against a wall, with the intent of the rebound hitting somebody and killing somebody, this is considered an act of murder, and you'll be subject to capital punishment.
So,
Right. So again, so if the if there has to be, you have to be doing something active to the person.
Is it still
yeah. In other words, you have to do something active to the person. The act may be an act of constriction, right? Which, you know, in other words, in general, it's considered grama. But in other words, but you have to do something to the person.
So even the warning
as given
is
right. Another way. Tani rav tachlifa bar marav kamadu rabbi abau tochar ba maspatu chutzar ba maschayev. So the Gemara now quotes in the name of Rav Tachlifa bar Marava, in front of Rabbi Abao, basically the same point that we just learned, that a rebounding rock is considered an act of murder, but then he draws a line. And when I say draws a line, I mean a linear measurement. Right. And that is that if the victim was within 4 amas of the wall, so Pater, chutz la arba amos chayev. So, within 4 amas you're exempt, and outside of 4 amas you're going to be chayv. So, Amalei Ravina LeRavashi Hechidami. So, Ravina says to Ravashi, what was that? Meaning, what are we doing, drawing a line in terms of where we're standing within proximity of the wall? Ida kan nichalei afilu portanami. Ida lo nichalei afilu tuvanami lo. Gemara says, I really don't get it. Meaning, if that was his intent, so then what difference does it make what the distance was? Meaning, as Rashi over here points out. Now, the truth of the matter is Rashi over here vacillates in terms of whether or not we're talking about Ritzicha b'mezid or Ritzicha b'shoge. But let's read the Rashi together, Afilu Tuvanami. Yosem Midala Amos, Li Pater, Delonis Kai Machshavoso. The Rashi assumes right now that we're talking about where the person did it inadvertently. Okay? And even in an inadvertent act of murder, all right, to what we would call manslaughter, right, in this country. And even if it was unintentional, but at least what you had to have done was something that could have resulted in the person's death. Rashi quotes the Gemara in Makos. Da'amar Mar. Va'asher lo tzada prat lemiskaven lezorg shtayim v'zorg dalet. Ama kevin delonicha le'denez olo. Meaning, if you threw a rock against the wall and you didn't have any intent that it would go 4 amas, your intent was that it was in your mind, it was going to be a light throw, a light rebound, and it wasn't going to go more than 2 amas. And it turns out that it went more than 2 amas. It went 4 amas. So even by a case of shogeg, you're going to be pater. Right? The Gemara in Makos says that you're only going to be chayv shogeg, again, even if it's unintentional. But it has to be where the force that you generated was what you thought it was going to be. You didn't see the person there. You weren't careful about where you threw it. But at least the force has to be generated enough where it was exactly what you intended in terms of the force. If you only were thinking that you're going to throw 2 amas, and it went 4 amas, so you're not even going to be sent into galus. So basically now, this is a question on our Gemara. Our Gemara says, greater than 4 amas, less than 4 amas. The Gemara says, I don't understand. How hard was he throwing it? So to which the Gemara explains, So Amrle Stam Misachim Mikadur Kama Menach Nechale. I'm sorry. Well, now we have in the parentheses Kaima Da Eilei Tvei Menach Nechale. So the Gemara says like this: that when it comes to people generally throwing against the wall, so how do we know what kind of rebound they want? So the way Rashi describes it, it really depends on how close they're standing next to the wall. Again, let's take a look at the Rashi. Stam mechasim mesach mekor berkamed aile umekarve lekosa b'shasha zarkim meinach nichale. If they're going right up against the wall, nice and close up against the wall, clearly they're looking for a rebound. Kedei shetach zor harbe hilkach batsi medal amos lo nichale detezo. So if it only traveled less than 4 amos, that wasn't his intent, and therefore he's going to be pater. If he traveled more than 4 amos, so then that was his intent, and therefore he's going to be chayev. Okay, good. And then Rashi goes through a second pshat. Ista mefarshi hay chayev and p'tur mimiso kigon shehisrabo. Rashi then suggests that maybe we're talking about where it was intentional. But Tosos, and Tosos here spends the entirety of this amud discussing this. Tosos says we can't be talking about intentional, because consider if we're talking about intentional murder, you have witnesses over there, and you have a warning. And the witnesses are asking the guy, what's your intent? Meaning, are you planning on killing that person? Because if you are, that's murder. So it'd be a little bit difficult to explain our entire Gemara as a function of a person intending on killing another person when you have witnesses over there and they're asking the question, do you plan on killing him? So if his answer is yes, so then it doesn't matter where he is relative to the wall, how far the rebound went. So Tosfos prefers Rashi's first pshat that we're just talking about Shogeg, we're not talking about Mason. Back to our Gemara. What did we just learn together in our Gemara? That even though the stone hit the wall and then bounced off the wall and hit somebody, that's considered an act of murder. Now, granted, the question of how hard you threw it, how close you were to the wall, but in other words, those are details and important details. But the basic idea is that it's not considered grama. It's considered koch biyadayim. That when you throw something against the wall and it bounces off the wall, that, even though it's a new trajectory, that's considered your force. And therefore, by Ritzicha, it would be considered an act of murder. And by Shogeg, it'd be considered an act of murder. And again, question of how hard you meant to throw it off the wall, how close you were to the wall, etc., etc. But if we could just take away those details for just a moment and ask the question, is that koch biyadayim? Clearly from our entire discussion, the answer is yes. And to which the Gemara now says, is that true throughout Shas? Meaning, is this concept, is this principle, that by me throwing something and bouncing off something and now heading in a new trajectory, is that considered my koach? Yes or no? Our Gemara certainly seems to indicate the answer is yes. And now we're going to see elsewhere throughout Shas whether or not this is true or not true. We're going to do one example today, and we'll do the other examples tomorrow. No, again, Shogeg versus Mazid, that's just going to be a question of whether the person's intent was to kill somebody or not. Meaning, no, but if I didn't know he was there, if I didn't know he was there, that's Shogeg. And then I'd have to go into Galus. If I did know that he was there and my intent was to kill him, but just off the rebound, so then I'm going to be Chayv Misa. The Gemara said that clearly. The only question that we dealt with earlier was even the case of Shogeg. Let's say I didn't plan on throwing it so hard. So I didn't expect the rebound to go that far. Or I expected the rebound to go further. But in other words, but clearly it's going to be an act of Shogeg or an act of Mazid.
What's this case? You just moved against
two questions. No, we didn't move cases. We're in the same case. We're just simply exploring the idea that even though it's not the trajectory where I sent it, even though it's now a new trajectory, but it's still considered my act. And what the Gemara is saying is it is considered my act, even though it's a new trajectory. To which the Gemara says, in other places in Shas, I don't think that's true. Well, let's see. The Gemara says, Ereminu, HaMekashva Nafal Kiddush Al Yadoa Al Atzad, Ve'arkachach Nafal Ashokes, Pasol. In order to successfully make the combination of ashes of Paraduma with the water, the Mayim Chayim, so what I need to do, the Torah says, is that I need to physically put the ashes into the water. Now, every time we describe this action of putting the ashes into the water, so the Mishnayos in Parah use the word Kiddush. Kiddush means, literally, sanctification. In this context, it means introducing the ashes into the water. And in order to successfully do so, I have to physically put the ashes into the water. If the ashes spill into the water, that's not Kiddush. In other words, that doesn't successfully make a combination of ashes and water, and I don't have the Mechatas to be Matara somebody. So, the Mishnah in Parah describes, HaMekashva Nafal Kiddush Al Yadoa Al Atzad, if let's say I'm doing the action of Kiddush, but it falls from my hand, or let's say it falls onto my hand, and from my hand it lands into the water. Or it falls onto the side of the trow, and from there it goes into the water. V'achakach Nafal Ashokas, Puzzle. So then it's going to be Puzzle, meaning I didn't successfully perform the act of Kiddush. So, what does that Mishnah seem to be telling us? Pretty clearly, it seems to be telling us is that in order for something to be considered my force, it had to have been the same trajectory in which I projected it. A projectile is only considered my force only if it goes in one trajectory. Once there's a secondary trajectory, it's not considered my force. And now if we can move that over to our discussion is throwing a ball against the wall, a stone against the wall. Once it goes into a new trajectory, it's not considered my force. But what we learned together is that, no, it is considered my force. This obviously presents a problem. So the Gemara says, well, I'll tell you what, that case in Parah is not talking about where I threw it. In other words, there was no force. What happened? the ashes fell out of my hand. So in other words, there was no initial force. It just simply gravity just took the ashes from my hand down into the trowel. Under those circumstances, that's not considered kiddush. But lu yitzu, had it been that there was a force where I threw it, it just happens to be that it didn't land directly into the water, land onto the side from the trowel, and then from there it went into the water, that would be considered kiddush. And the Mishnah over there was only discussing a scenario where it just fell out of my hand, and so the only force that brought it in there was gravity, not me. Okay, so that's the Gemara's suggestion in terms of the Mishnah Parah, and how that Mishnah Parah does not reflect necessarily Akasha and our discussion. Let's quickly recap. We started the Mishnah today regarding Chiyuve Mises based in specifically Sayef, two Isurim in the Torah that are subject to Sayef, Ir Nidachas and Ritzicha, and what our Mishnah then did is launch into a scenario of what is and what is not considered Ritzicha. What is not considered Ritzicha is basically anything which is a Grumma-like scenario. However, notable exception, constriction. If I constrict somebody in a situation where the cause of death is present, is currently present, and I constrict them under those circumstances, so that is considered an act of Ritzicha. Again, I said this at the beginning of the year, I want to say it at the end of the year, not making a distinction between right and wrong, between what's okay versus what's not okay. It's all not okay. It's all considered killing somebody. It's just a question of hitting the threshold of Mises Beis Din. When is this considered a capital crime? So when it's an action or in the constriction with the danger currently present, that is considered a capital crime. And then what we did over the course of this morning is go case by case scenario in which it is considered a capital crime, it's not considered a capital crime, with the overarching theme of basically whether it's grumma or it's not grumma. But again, grumma, not grumma is not a perfect definition, working definition, because remember, constriction is also considered an act of murder. So it's a little more nuanced than just simply saying grumma versus non-grumma.